don't gotta be brand new, cause I've been brand new. I'm clean. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sharp. I'm sharp. I'm gonna learn you something.
Oh, I'm brand new.
Yes, I am.
I'm brand new.
In the water, and the water was cold. It chilled my body, and not my soul. Let me tell you how I'm feeling now. Let me tell you what to do. I don't care what you think about me. I'm feeling brand new.
Yes, I'm brand new.
Yeah, yeah. Through some hard times, trying to work things out. Couldn't see how I was gonna make it out. But I kept on pushing. I made it through. I went to the well and came out brand new.
And welcome to the Soul Savage Show here, new time every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central, and 7 o'clock on the East Coast. And welcome our hosts, Q-Lynn Green and Whitney. Hello, ladies. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing? You
Have
to remember yourself. Because I be forgetting too. Every Thursday instead of every Friday.
Yeah, we have been so used to Friday nights. You know, I have to remind myself, okay, it's Thursday, so I make sure not to make that mistake. But doing pretty good, doing pretty good. And Whitney, how are you?
Hey, not too bad.
Oh, outstanding, outstanding. And I don't know whether you guys had a chance to listen last night, but we had a fantastic Q-Lynn. I think you cued in. Pardon the pun. With Imaja Jubilee out of Richmond, Virginia, and perhaps you can have her on your show sometime. Anyway, Imaja is
I was listening to that last night. I wonder if she's related. Is she related to the Jubilee that was in Virginia?
I don't know. She was born in Virginia. I know she was born in Virginia, and now she lives in my hometown, in Richmond, Virginia. And she's an author. She's a playwright. She writes songs. She's also a TV host as well. So
yeah, I was just wondering if she was part of that gospel, if she knew the gospel Pilgrim Jubilee group, the ones from, I think they're out of Virginia. But we're gonna introduce our guest that we have on. He is a Grammy Award winning producer, musician, one of the finest guitarists I've ever heard. I think in my top five Mount Rushmore's guitarists. I have different Mount Rushmore's, and he's definitely about one for guitarists. He's played for T.I., Jamie Foxx, Jay-Z, the list goes on and on. But I ain't gonna sit here and name drop, because I can do this all day. He's also part of one of the best quartet groups of all time, the Soul Seekers, guitars, basses, all that great. Produced one of my favorite albums of 2015, Tweets. Charlene album. Oh, man, I could just keep on going. But right now, introduce, lo and behold, we have the phenomenal guitarist, Charlie Burrell. Y'all give it up for Charlie Burrell.
How y'all doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing? Yeah, you got the track, please. You got the name of the best. A round of applause to you. Thank you so much for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction.
Oh, man. Started the show. We played your brand new song, new. It's a fantastic song off of his latest album, debut album, I believe, Testimony. And I want to get into that, but I want to go back a little bit and just let our audience know, if they ain't already hip to you, I'm just gonna, you know, go track back to childhood and just really, what was it that, sort of that moment to where you said, or whatever part of your childhood, whether if it was in church or just listening to other, musicians, what was it that said, hey, I want to play, this instrument, whatever it was, whatever instrument you started with, but what was it that drew you to music, playing it?
Well, my grandfather was a pastor. He had 11 kids by one woman. They were all at the church. And all of my uncles and stuff, they sang and played instruments. And then they had kids, and they all play instruments. My cousin Michael Burrell was playing the organ at 6 years old. My cousin Bennett was playing the piano and organ at 14, and probably earlier than that. I started out on drums, and that slot was already filled, and my brother had a guitar at the house, and I just wanted to be a part of the band at church. I just wanted to, you know, fit in. So the guitar was the only thing that was around, so I picked that one up.
Oh, wow. And I always ask a musician this question because I always want to get into it, but what was it, anything particular that, in terms of doing it professionally, like, was it a certain age to where you were like, I'm going to pursue this full time?
Donnie McClurkin came to our church.
You just gonna name drop
time.
Like that?
Yeah, he came to our church. When I was 13, and I didn't even know it was gonna be there. He just did like a conference, and he had to use the band that was there, and he liked us, and then he took us on the road. And when he took us on the road, that's when I kind of like was like, okay, I can do this. He wasn't firing me. The first show, I was looking at him like, you still cool? You still want to have me? And then, you know, I was still on the road. I was making $200 a week. And I did the Shout Tour with Fred Hammond. And that's when I said, okay, I want to do this for a living.
Wow. And what was it? Was it any song in particular or just a style of music to where it was like, first song do you remember that, like, drew you to music, like, that sort of your childhood soundtrack?
Because it was two sides. I mean, you know, like, growing up in the church, I had a brother named Patrick who didn't really like going to church that much. He bought all the hip-hop albums. Every time a hip-hop album dropped, it was in my house, whether my parents knew it or not. We shared the same room, and then my older brother went to college for producing. And when he got home, I think I was about 16, he was like, man, you're not going to really make that much money just playing a guitar. You got to learn how to write music. And we started a company called CKB Music, or that's when I started producing. I started really getting into songs that I like. I guess there's so many songs that I like at that point. I don't know if it's one, but you know what it is? Tony, I gravitated to Tony, and D'Angelo a lot.
Right.
Because of the guitars that was in their records.
Wow.
Never heard somebody play like that before.
And just to add on to that, like with, you know, as because I'm a musician as well, because I get it. In terms of, like, when you were getting into the writing, or was it producing first? Which one was it? Is it like sort of interchangeable?
Progression. Yeah. Yeah, writing, because when I was coming up with the melodies and when he told me that counts as writing, I was like, oh, so if I make this part up, I get residuals? It's like, yeah. So I would just kind of make up songs and a bar loops. I met Warren Campbell, I played him a CD, and the rest was history. He wanted to sign me. But the only thing about that, the next month, Timberland went to sign me, and I was W-22. So I was working with Timberland and Warren kind of at the same time, and I learned from, like, you know, two of the greatest producers in my day.
You see, in line with the questions I'm asking, too, what was the first, official, like, that first introduction into the music industry? Did it start with Aaliyah, or did it start before that? What was the...
Donnie McClurkin was the first gospel, and then as far as like mainstream was Aaliyah. Aaliyah was the first one.
Okay. And were you a part of, you came in, was it like late, early 2000, or was it when it was the whole, the basement swing mob movement? Was it with that camp?
Nah,
It was 2000.
Okay. It was right when Aaliyah gearing up to do her last album.
Okay. Oh, okay. I know that time frame too. So were you like her touring musician? Did you?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, cool. I think I've seen you. I think it's like some old. Some fans. I don't know who's in control of it, but they have actual videotapes of some of her performances online. I think I remember seeing you on there. It was like a few musicians on there. I think
yeah.
I saw you one of those yeah. clips. But I always had this question. Speaking of Aaliyah. Did you do that guitar lick over? I always wanted to ask you this. Did you do that guitar lick over? I don't wanna. That it was. I think it was on the Next Friday soundtrack or Romeo Must Die or something. Did you do that? Did you play over that?
It's called I Just Wanna.
I think it was produced by Jazzy Faye. I forgot who.
Alone.
Yeah.
Nah,
yeah.
I didn't do that one. I did.
Oh, okay.
I did More Than a Woman.
Okay.
More than a woman.
Gotcha. Oh my God, that's a classic one too. That's like the whole centerpiece of the song is that one. And then also
yeah.
I want to talk before I'm gonna get into all the musician nerd questions later. But I'm gonna stick to it. What was that experience like with getting that first one? What was the I feel like it takes a while in terms of like I feel like you always should be a student of the music. Singer, songwriter, whatever. I feel like y'all
right.
should be a student. So, what was that? Did you know who you were in terms of sonically, like what your sound was back then, or was it just a progression as you were going into the music industry?
It was a progression because I was very impressionable. Like anytime, like I saw somebody that was like better than me, I would like admire them and chase them. Like I was trying to chase after Warren. I was trying to do what he was doing. And then when I met Timberland, I was trying to chase that. And then when I met Raphael Sadiq, I was trying to chase that. I was just learning because I didn't have nobody to really... Being a producer back in the day wasn't like it is now. Like, you see a lot of producers now than ever. But before, that wasn't heard of. I didn't see anybody actually doing it. So when I seen it done, I cleaved to them. And I was, but... It took a while to find my own style. Especially another songwriter producer I was around was Jubal, and he was a guitar player.
He's still touring with a part of Frankie Beverly and Maze, because I think
yeah.
I saw him. I seen him. What was it? Last year I went to the to their concert in Dallas, and he was. I think I saw him backstage. Man,
nice,
he's cold. But yeah, right.
So I was around, you know, being with the Soul Seekers, it was always,
right.
Through all that, I was still trying to find my sound, it's kind of hard to find your sound when you're around a bunch of great people.
Right.
That you you want to be like, kind of like Kobe, trying to be like Michael Jordan.
Right. Do you have a favorite, or do you have any guitar parts or bass parts that you played over, like from either old cuts or new cuts that most of us or people that don't check album credits? Is there anything you played on that?
I played on. It's a guy named Sir. He's on TDE. He just came out.
Oh, yeah.
I did a song called Summer in November, and a lot of people don't know that I played bass and guitar on that and produced that record. I really, really like that record, the way I played it. A lot of the Tweet stuff, because that's when I was, felt like I can be me.
Right.
More than a woman, I really, really liked that because I felt like that was a different line. And it's another line that I did. It's on a CeeLo record called I'll Be Around.
A lot of people. I love that song. That's one of my favorite. And it sounds like something like your chord choice. It just certain musicians that have a style of play, and I could just like Ernie Isley, like if you pointed out, Jimmy, it's like certain signature sounds I can point out. But getting back, I was going to ask another one. I love quoting jazz musician Sonny Rollins. He said something that always like resonates with me. He said, "When I was playing, I just wanted to get the technical part as best I could and leave the other part to the universal spirit." And he's a yoga, you know, expert. He's been, you know, practicing yoga 30. I feel like all that synonymous with each other. But what he said made sense because it's like, I feel like it's a like spiritual tie to like everything, especially with songwriters and musicians that create. So I wanted to know, like you were saying with the tweet record that you've done with her, and you allowing her artistry, allowing you to play how you want to. How does that, in terms of the creating, producing, and writing with that process, what's that process like? What is it just come to you naturally, or is it something to where you just hear certain? Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, you're good. You're good.
It comes to me naturally with her because it's, I'm writing music, and I'm playing it, and we kind of come from the same place. Like, you know, she come from a quartet background. I didn't really grow up in quartet, but then I got quartet. Like, I kind of got schooled in quartet later on in my life. And it's like basically what I do, she kind of already like the same thing. And it just worked out that way. But this question is kind of hard because, like, I feel like now, where I'm at now in life, I'm just now finally, like, I'm doing what I want to do now. Like, I think, like, for all the people who follow me and everything, they haven't really heard me yet because I haven't, it's kind of in the industry, you're kind of controlled. You have to play by other people's rules. If you're working on somebody's album, they have to do it their way. But now that I'm an artist now, I'm going to be able to show everybody, you know, what I like, what I listen to, the things that, you know, because there's songs out there that I produced that was on the radio. I didn't really think they was going to pick those tracks. I didn't really like them all that much.
All right. And with the, I want to go to the Jamie because I know you played for. When was it? When did you start doing? Was that Unpredictable album? Was that led to you? I know you toured with him and was his tour musician for a while, or still is probably. But when did that connection happen with that album? Because I know you played on that one as well, the Unpredictable album.
Yeah, it'd be. So actually, I was, it was funny. I used to live by him, and I went over his house with Tweet, actually. And
okay.
I was playing basketball with him. He thought I was a basketball player, and I remember being in the studio, and Tweet was playing. She was about to drop the second album, It's Me Again. And he was like, "Man, who's playing guitar on that?" And then Tweet pointed at me. He was looked at me like, because he like, "You was a basketball player." And after that, like, we became cool after that. And we recorded that song, Do What You Do, around the same time. And then he asked me to go on tour with him. So kind of like, we kind of knew each other playing basketball first, so we're kind of like a friendship.
Oh, I think I remember seeing you, because I used to intern at Foxhole long, long time ago, like almost 11 years ago. And I think it was when he was doing the Intuition album, he only had like he was doing that tour like crazy, promotional with the radio show and all that, but I think I remember seeing, I forgot what song it was he did on the album, I think it's called Overdose, because it was live, I think, I forgot where we were at though, because it was in a live location, did you play on the, were you there? I'm trying to remember. It was live on
probably.
The Fox Radio. I don't know. It was a long time ago. It was like 07, 08. It was a long time ago. I don't even remember. Right. I think I remember that. But that part, I knew you were on that, Do What It Do, Did you play on all the guitar parts on that album?
Yeah, I produced the whole record.
Oh, gotcha.
And then Tank actually plays some of the keyboard parts.
Yeah, because I think I think he did background too, because I hear him on DVD.
Yeah, he did backgrounds on that. Yeah, we did. It was a track that I actually did for the ESPY Awards. It was called "I Want to Be a Tennis Ball."
Yeah. That's still getting viral. It like goes viral like every 3 years because it'll randomly pop up and it'll get like 2.5 million hits.
Right.
But I want to get to Soul Seekers. That's one of my top favorite gospel bands is Soul Seekers. I'm still looking for that next album. I know y'all tired of people asking, but I ain't gonna ask.
I'm not tired of that. But, I love quartet music. I wish we can get together.
Right. Scheduling. Yes. Yeah. I want to know I know all y'all hit together because all y'all elite musicians, y'all been in the game. You know, Warren Campbell, like I said before, he's in my top five producers. Warren Campbell, Nisan Stewart, Juju Smith, it's so many of y'all. Y'all such amazing writers, musicians, and singers. How did that whole super group come together?
They had a Take Me Back concert at Nissan Church, and everybody was trying to do choir stuff, and they was like, man, let's not do a choir stuff. They were playing around in rehearsal one day and acting like, you know, quartet singers, and they was like, let's do some quartet. So there was a one-time concert, but it was so good that they was like, man, we should just do this, and then that's how it started.
Wow. If y'all do a next record, are you going to sing? Because that was going to be my question to your album Testimony, because you're lead vocals, you're doing vocals on there, and you have an amazing voice. I was wanting to know, like, were you going to do, like, lead parts in Soul Seeker songs, or are you just going to do the instrumental
producer? I'm not sure. Like, if we come together, like, I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know, especially like because it's been so long. I'm transitioned. I think it was one song that we worked on. I did do lead. The Soul Seekers wanted to use that song on my album called "Everybody with One Accord." You know, One Accord. They wanted that for the album, but I ended up using it for mine. So I would have led a song on this new album that was coming out, but it stopped. Right.
Y'all getting a lot of traction because Diddy, I think some months ago, he made it a hit song again because It's All God. He was singing it in his video and it went viral. So
yeah.
I was like, people will look for it, but I'm still holding out for one. But I can get with y'all individual project. We're going to get to the tweet project part of the new one. But we're going to talk about your latest album, Testimony. I think all the way through, I think conceptually it's amazing. And it all ties together. I love the fluidity of the tracks, and I don't feel any of them are out of place. I was doing my little album review. I do that music journalist / musician. I just think it was an amazing album. I honestly feel like every influence in there. Like I feel like it's sort of like how D'Angelo creates his records with whatever musician, and he'll just put on like Ohio Players, or he'll put on you know, whatever artist, Prince, and just play records and just create from that, just that inspiration. And I hear some of his, Raphael Sadiq, of course, but Black Messiah, I hear some of that in there. I hear Jimi Hendrix record. I think I hear a little bit of everything in there. So what was that creative process like? Was it just stuff that was coming from you? Was it just little melodies that came to you that made you
want
to create a whole album?
That was years and years of just me having songs in my computer, because that it wasn't done that like one time. And those are just moments in my life where I just wrote those songs, and I just got to a point where I was like, I just want to put out this project. And like Trade It All was a record that I, like, every record that's on there is like I meant, like, it was from my heart, and I was finally able to kind of like put it all in one project, because some of those records are very, very old, some of them are new, and it just came together. This next record is going to be different because it kind of was all done at the same time, And it was in, it was done at like a studio. A lot of those records was done in my house, traveling. To, one of the records was back in 2010, maybe earlier than that. Like, so it was me trying to, you know, like bring it all back together without losing the records. I really love those records. Some of the records I had to mix the two tracks. I lost the file too.
Right.
But to me, it was about the message. I called it testimony because it's just my testimony. I didn't really want to come off like a, you know, like as somebody to say, here, I'm a gospel artist and I'm perfect, right, and I'm this and that, because I'm not. A lot of the songs is not really praise and worship. It's just basically I'm just telling my story. Like, I need some help. I'm trading it off for you, the blood. I'm warning the people. Warning the people, probably the best, like, gospel. And I'm warning people that God is coming back. But even Exodus is kind of, I'm just kind of being a voice for, like, my, like, people that don't know God, that want to get to know God, that can kind of, you know, kind of helping to bridge that gap. Because a lot of times, it's hard for somebody like Kirk Franklin to go down to Pasadena and go to projects and talk to the dude. So, kind of, my testimony is a way where I can not only talk about my stuff, I can actually bring other people in on it. So everybody has a testimony. The word says that we overcome by our testimonies in the blood of the Lamb.
Right. It sort of had that vintage, like, soulful feel, like a Muddy Waters, like that record, the one, the people with Raphael Sadiq. It kind of had that vintage vibe to it. Like, you know what I mean? Like R&B.
Yeah,
that style.
That's my influences. I love older music. I love soul music. I love instruments. I love bands. Like Sly and the Family Stone, like one of my favorite bands.
Oh.
Like, and I told you before, one of the first bands that my cousin told me to listen to was Tony, Tony, Tony. And, you know, it's just inside of me.
Wow.
D'Angelo, yeah. I love D'Angelo. I love his band. All the guys in
it. It's sort of like this album feels like a lineage to that, because I listen to it, like, with the same ears as them in terms of the musicality, the message, and the vocals. Is sort of just like with Solange records, even though it's, you know, clearly her voice is different, but sonically it's like the same in terms of the message.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like folks, then, like what Sly the Family Stone did with songs.
Right. And then Solange was it's funny that you say that, because she went to Tweet. Tweet helped her out with that album, and Raphael Sadiq.
Ooh. With the, oh man, yeah, she was on doing the backgrounds on Mad.
Yeah,
on that record.
She did a lot. She probably, I think she
oh,
did
yeah,
a lot
yeah.
more
oh.
than that. But they
wait, which one?
Didn't read it. I don't know. I got to ask her again, but I know she pretty much, like, you know, like, she did a lot more than that thing.
I could probably, if I listen to the album, because I'm trying to remember the tracks off the top of my head, but I can't remember. But if I can, like, remember three or four of them, I think I could probably hear her voice now. But
yeah, I'd be doing the same thing. I'd be listening. Right. Like, okay, that sounds like this, but you never know sometimes. But
right.
Yeah, they're getting ready to work on something together. That's Roger Savage.
And I think a couple more on this album. What is it? Was it easy for you to transition to doing singing and playing at set? Because I know you just used to.
No, it wasn't.
That's what I was like, what was that transition like going into singing and having to be your own, like doing, like, because I know you're getting ready, you're about to go on a fall tour with Raphael Sadiq, and that's cool as well. I was going to ask you questions about that, but what does it feel like to be that center? Like, you're the center of attention now, like, you're not in the background playing, like, you're the forefront. Like, what does that feel like?
It feels good, because now I can tell my story, and I can, you know, not have to be misunderstood, or like, I like it because I'm able to tell my story. And it was a hard transition, because a lot of people, like, if you're doing one thing for a long time ago, they just don't like if you try to do something else. Just people that are around you, could be family members, so-called friends, you try something new, you really don't get very much support doing something that is new. They don't want you. It's like, it's almost like, it's, for me, I had to get by myself and just believe in myself and just, because it's like, you know, it's hard when you hear somebody, what do you tell them? Like, man, like, I don't know about your singing, man. It don't sound too good. You don't want to hurt nobody's feelings. So, and then, like, I always had, like, a self-doubt about it. But certain people in my life encouraged me, Raphael Sadiq being one of them. Because he was the same way. And turns out Sly was the same way. Sly said that he didn't think he could sing. I didn't think I could sing very good because my voice was different. But I got to the point where I don't care what people think. If I got a message and I got a word, I'm supposed to say it. Like, yeah, especially if it feels good to me. I'm just having fun. Like, music is fun to me. And being out front is fun because I can do it the way I want to do it, the way I see it. You know, I don't have to be locked into somebody else's vision. And I've been under a lot of different people my whole life, and which is fine. I've enjoyed it, but it feels good to play music the way I want to play it. And sing it the way I want to sing.
I want to ask, this album is fantastic. I was going to know, was you, or I don't know, you know, what your team had in place, but were y'all planning on, like, submitting this to the Grammys for a nomination? Because I feel like R&B album and traditional, I feel like Brand New could be a traditional R&B nomination, and then I could see it in... It could, yeah, I can see it in that as well. But urban, I think the urban contemporary, they can add it in that as well.
Yeah, I submitted it as the album, man. I submitted Brand New as a single, but I think they're in gospel categories. I'm not sure if they're in, okay, like, any other.
Oh, okay.
But Brand New is being re-released, so Brand New was supposed to be the first single off of Snoop's album. I got a version with Snoop on it, so Brand New will be re-released.
That's another question I had. Your family, you have a large family. Because it was a pastor that you're related, or by marriage related to, I think his name is Chad E. Brown. I was going to have him on.
Yeah.
And how is that all family? That I know some of the Burrells. What is that? How are you related to those the ones that are on the new Snoop album, the Bob Will Love album?
They're my older cousins. They're my older cousins. I'm proud of them. I'm proud to see them, like, you know, be able to do what they love to do on that, you know, like, big stage. And I feel like they did a great job.
And then Lonnie, he don't go by Lonnie no more. Alonzo Burrell, I know that's your first cousin, isn't it? I've met him. I know he's some background with Jamie, a long time ago. But yeah, I met him a couple times. He's cool. But do you do music with? Is he still putting out music?
I'm not sure. I think he's working with Snoop. The last project that was the last project I've heard him doing.
Oh, see, I gotta look on the credits. On the credits, it just says the Burrells, like they
right.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm pretty sure. He had a song on the album, so that's how I heard it.
And then speaking of, I know recently you just lost somebody, 1500 or nothing, the band, Carlos McSwain. Yeah. That was because I met him a couple times, and then one time I played with him in Dallas, and he was just such a cool cat. He was even keel, nice guy. So I want to know, like, how did that loss affect you? What did you want to remember about his legacy? And to people that listen in, Carlos McSwain, he's back for everybody, Usher, and also Snoop Dogg recently. He was, I think, the BET Award. He played the tour with Snoop. So how did that loss affect, and what did you think of his legacy now?
Carlos is amazing person. He's a good person. He's just a good person, and it affects me because usually good people like him get used a lot. I feel like all the love that, like, he was getting when he passed away was, like, I just wish people could show love when people are alive. Like, I just...
Right.
Like,
right.
They know how... Like, everybody around him know how talented he was and everything. And it's like, Carlos been a star. He's been a star. And sometimes I don't understand why certain things don't happen for people fast enough. Like, Carlos is one of the best drummers I've ever heard in my life.
And, oh, he's amazing.
Like,
oh.
One of the coolest people you ever meet in your life. And I just wish, like, he would have seen all the love he got when he was alive. Like, and I think this music industry is sad now, and it does that to people. Like, it makes people feel that, it makes people that are talented and good feel like less than because they're not selling out to what the new stuff is and try to make you feel inadequate with the stuff you're doing is whack or something like that, or make you feel low. Or, and it's like, I just felt like he was a victim from that. Like, what more does he got to do? So a man got to do to just, you know, like, everybody see how good he was. And that could lead to the depression and stuff like that. And I know, man, Carlos, we talked a lot. And, you know, he wasn't a depressed dude, but we talked about, you know, like, our future and our dreams. And, like, I just thank God that, like, his music is still out there. And I know, like, some of the music that he wrote is still down here. And I just hope that they get a proceeds to his daughter and he gets what he deserves, because he deserved a lot more than he got when he was alive.
Right. He was a, just from what I know, the couple times I met him, he was amazing. And it, like you said, his drumming skills was, like, bar none. His pocket, he could do everything else. He was a producer, songwriter. Right, exactly.
He was a singer.
Right.
He used to sing on the drums back in his hometown, like, doing shows. He packing out clubs. He, you know, but he don't walk around telling anybody all that stuff. He just showed up to work, and he killed. He did his job.
So I was glad. I was, right.
Dope records, too.
Right. I was glad. I was happy that the ones that were a part of that, like Snoop Dogg, paid tribute to him on his Instagram and talked about him. And then also Dad Dillinger from the Dogtown producer,
yeah.
Gave love. And then people that knew him. And just I saw the musician community come together and really reflect on, you know, his legacy and all the great stuff he did. But, yeah. He's definitely be missed because he's a great musician. I think I only have a couple more with the Tweet project that's coming out, the new album that's coming out. Man, the Charlene album, I'm still on the high from the Charlene album because that, well, I tell you, it's amazing. The conceptually great gospel harmonies you have, just deep-rooted, soulful instrumentation and the quality of the lyrics. She's always been a great pen game is crazy. But is that always that what's that magic like working with Tweet with doing a project? Like, what is it that is it just you just play around on a guitar, just do little licks there and she just fills in that space? What's that creative space like with putting together an album for Tweet?
Pretty much. It's just we just do it like almost like if you were young and you went to church and then your cousin and you was all playing instruments, y'all just did it second nature. Like, we just pick up instruments and we just do it. It's no, because I know I've been in a lot of other sessions, they is like kind of like uptight. People be like,
right.
It's never ever forced. It's just, this is what it is. I can't even explain it. It's kind of like when you get used to a certain way of doing things and you start building up a cohesiveness, like kind of like call it like when you're watching basketball and then you get the team that just, you know, you keep getting better and better and then you guys have...
like a Golden State. Like they started out like
yeah.
It keeps growing, getting better
right.
Every time.
It's kind of... The like music is never like now at this point music is not like a challenge because I don't think we don't think like that as far as like challenging it's more so like a responsibility. Like I got something to say, I know what God gave me, I know the gift that I have. It's just how, what time, and what season to put things out or, like, to get people to hear it, because people really need to hear it. Like, this is just what we do. We do it in our sleep. We do it off Pro Tools, in Pro Tools. Like, right now, I'm in a session now, like, you know, guitars are being played. We just kind of just vibe, and whatever, like, message, like, she's a songwriter. Like, I don't have to really, and a producer, so I don't really have to do much producing when I'm working with her.
Right.
Versus if I'm working with somebody else. So, that makes it easy.
When is that project supposed to drop, or is it just still in the process of making?
It's almost done, but I'm not sure when it's coming out. She kind of gives hints and stuff on her Instagram, and like she likes her fans. So at this point, I'll say we're like 75% done. If the body of work is there, it's just now finishing things up.
And man, and her voice, I feel like it's so like we talk about powerhouse vocalists. Most people say Fantasia, and that is true. But that sweet spot, that nice, like that soulfulness in Tweet's voice. And we had Selena Johnson's manager on last week. We interviewed her, and she was saying how much like Selena and her love Tweet's voice. Like her voice is phenomenal.
Oh, that's what's up.
They love her voice, and they will put her like top five with all those like powerhouse singers like Kelly Price and stuff like that, because her voice is that good. And that's what people, that distinction, it doesn't necessarily have to be like using that full voice. Like sometimes that subtleness and knowing note placement, like what she does on record, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that's important, the note placement. Like a lot of people can do fancy stuff and riffs and runs, but if you're not meaning or being very, very committed to knowing exactly where it goes and how to sing, and it kind of comes off like it. When she's one of the few that we have that knows how to do the right harmonies, know when to put the harmonies in there, has a sense of, you know, she's a musician, so, you know.
Yeah, the same. I think her and Teacher Moses, I think they're both in that same lineage of, if I would compare, not necessarily comparing voices, but in terms of that sweet finesse of like that control and power of doing riffs, like you can do the gospel riffs, but then you can like still stay in pocket. It's sort of the same thing that musicians do, like you said, with like, it's an instrument, so you do it the same way.
Right.
You gotta know
right.
when to pull back, when to give it all on the record.
Yeah, and they both write their own music. So when you're writing your own music, you know where you want things to go.
Right.
You know, versus like, you know, a lot of artists that we have now, that's a lot of people's favorite artists and stuff like that, they don't really write their own music. And a lot of times they're not even singing their own songs. They have like Melodyne and Auto-Tune and Nudging and Nudge People Back, and just like, so a lot of like artists sound the same because of that. But
right.
In this instance, it's like, it's kind of more throwback, like Al Green. Al Green's going to do what he wants to do. Marvin Gaye's going to do what he wants to do. It's going to sound, it's going to have a consistent sound. Tweet is always going to sound like the way she sounds because it's her. She's not depending on anybody to give her sound. She has her own sound.
Yes, exactly. I think I have two more questions before my co-host Whitney asked her questions. But you're, like you said, you're getting ready to be on tour with Raphael Sadiq. Well, doing a fall tour with Raphael Sadiq, legendary Raphael Sadiq, producer, musician, singer, songwriter, legendary from Tony, Tony, Tony. What is that like? I wanted to ask a two-part question. Like, what is it like? You said it's one of your musical heroes. What was that like? You know, working him, you bringing that Warner People record to him, or any records you work with him on, and him liking it, and him actually bringing you on tour. What was that like?
It's a blessing because I don't have to really go. I can go to the source, like somebody who knows, somebody I can watch who kind of did it their way, and then like play for Prince when he was younger, and I could just see how things were supposed to be done. Like a lot of artists that I work with, a lot of people don't like to rehearse. Just a lot of, just everything that he does, the way he do things is, he does it the right way. Like, and I can see exactly what it takes to get to that next level. Like, far from rehearsing to where you eat, way you, you know, everything you do to give you longevity. Cause that's one thing he has, longevity, and he got so many different things that, like, far as a producer, and then you got the artist Raphael Sadiq, got the musician Raphael Sadiq, and he scores a lot of music on TV that a lot of people don't know about. So for me, it was just like I don't have to go through the fire that he went through the fire, because I can learn from him. Like, I could just kind of like avoid stuff and just, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is how you do it. And he's kind of been mentoring me and helping me. And a lot of people would love the chance to sing at like some of the places I sang at on this last tour, as far as being a vocalist.
Right.
And I was able to do that through him and be, you know, I got a cool response from the crowd, like, and just seeing it for myself, so I won't be nervous when it's all on me. Like, I kind of have a sense of what's going on, how to do things, and been amazing. I've been playing guitar with him since back in the day too, so finally to sing, and he was one of the ones that always pushed me to sing, like, so I was
right. It's all full circle. Man, and that's amazing that that moment happened, because, like you said, a lot of singers can't do those. But I think Raphael Sadiq, he's such a musician. Like, he loves, like, you could just tell, like, in his music and what he does, like, with all the projects he does, like you said, doing Scorn. I think he did Insecure, Luke Cage, I think, the first season he scored, and then some more. So, you know, he executive produces on, you know, other albums that a lot of people don't know about, you know.
Yeah.
I think the recent one, I mean, the ones where I noticed it, I think Letticy's Turn Me Loose album, that was like 10, 11 years ago when I realized he was doing it. But I think back then, D'Angelo Records, it was D'Angelo's, the Untitled, the actual How Does It Feel, that's when I started noticing he was doing stuff behind the scenes, and you wouldn't think that since he's already established in Tony. I was like, and then him getting that feel. So I wanted to know, with everything that you got going on, it was leading me up to ask, like you said earlier in the interview, that you're finally in that place, I guess, creatively, to where you're doing the music you want to do. What more is it actually that you want to do? Like, is it more doing more albums, or is it just creatively, like, doing, like, touring and just being out in the front more? Is that a part of it, or is it anything else that you haven't accomplished yet?
I feel like the only thing I want to do now is play my guitar, play the music that I love to do, and that's it. For people, and the reason why I feel like I want to do it so bad, the reason behind it, because I hear too much negative stuff on the airwaves. If I can give a little bit of positivity in the dark, like, I want to do it. Like, I got so much more to say. I got a lot to say. And I find myself talking to a lot of my friends. They probably, like, talk to me. If I'm out there on that road, that's the place I can do it. So I always thought one day I'd probably be a preacher and everything, but now that stage could be my pulpit, and I can give people, you know, a message and my testimony, my music, here on out. That's what I'm looking forward to, and then kind of meeting people that's like-minded, just like me, that's on that same message to push the line that, like, there are real men out here, there are godly men out here, there is good music, there, you know, like, this could be another light, throw the darkness. I just love you there. I can't stop thinking about a lot of the stuff that's out now. I don't like to play. Just safe right now. Play my own music. I'm glad that people are kind of you know, paying attention. Like, cool. Peaceful. I'm at peace when I'm doing this. I can control my narrative. I'm putting my family first. I'm not putting my family on the back burner. Like, I saw this a long time ago, and it finally happened. It took a lot of sacrifice. It took a lot of, you know, it's still sacrifice because I'm not asking nobody for any money. I'm doing it all myself, putting it out myself. I learned every all the programs myself, and I'm looking forward to on the same on the live stuff. Get my own truck, get my own van. And I got a good person to learn from him with Raphael, kind of the same way, self-sufficient. Want to be able to sing, have fun, be able to be a great husband and father to my kids.
That's amazing. You go ahead, Whitney.
All right. Hey. Hi. So you mentioned that we've been mentioning and discussing like how much you've done over the years and things, and so I was wondering, are there any like surprising moments or experiences that you've had like while out on tour, just something that really surprised you, something you weren't expecting to run into or have to do, anything like that?
Yeah, I don't really like my touring experiences. I didn't like that. Everything, like when you're on tour, it's kind of like you can either do two things. One thing I just didn't like is a lot of people mm-hmm. get stuck. They get stuck on drugs. They get stuck on alcohol. They forget about life, and they forget that like this music is not important like that. It's just what we do. It's not who we are. Like, and right. I see a lot of people go years. Because I was on a rock now. I didn't realize that I was an alcoholic. Going like,
oh wow.
10 years, and what I mean by that is like, you know, some way a musician casually has a drink before a show or after
right.
a show.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
right.
I ain't no alcoholic. Like, dude, you're doing it every day. Like, that's not realizing like my life.
Right.
It's like music people are stuck in this bubble, and it's like everybody's in this one bubble. And like, so it's a million experiences of things I just didn't like being on the road. And, like, a lot of people that was my heroes, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm my hero. This is not a lot of fake stuff, a lot of stuff that's bad, you know. So not getting paid on time, not stuff being unfair, like people trying to steal from you. Like, not good. So I took a whole other step back. I just got up out of it. And I was like, I'm technically not in the industry. I just basically, somebody wants to do a deal with me, I'm like, okay, for this, and I control it, and then I go right back home. The person. Yeah, get out of that.
Nice. Yep. Well, I mean, that's good. I'm glad that you recognize that, because we see those exactly. stories time and time again, like, of what can go wrong with some extremely talented people, and it's unfortunate when it happens. So kudos to you for seeing that pattern and taking a step back and getting some control over it.
That's what it all was about. I'm like, I'm letting it all go.
Okay.
Like, y'all can keep it, y'all can have it. I don't care about props. I don't care about nobody. I don't even care about none of it. Like, none of it is all fake. All dust in the wind. Like, music is just music. Might like it, they like it. Like, it's not for everybody.
Right.
Not everybody's going to like my song.
Right. True. It sounds like you're in a really good spot now, though, because a lot of things that you've mentioned, like, you're in a different place now. Like, it's not so much about who likes it and who doesn't, but you have a message that you feel needs to
all
be shared,
about.
And that's what you're doing. And so, like, that's huge. Like, that's a great thing. With all of that you're talking about, like, there's a lot of artists that are out there, like, if I was, and I'm not, but if I were to try to get into the music industry, a lot of these things that you're bringing up, they wouldn't be anything that I would have any clue or any idea about. Do you have any, like, tips or advice that you could share with people who, for lack of some better terms, may just be completely ignorant or naive to what goes on behind the scenes? Do you have anything that you can, any words of wisdom you can share with them, like things to work, watch out for, or just things that they should try to avoid?
I would say focus on music, your music, and make sure you have somebody protecting you. Don't make any deals with nobody without having a lawyer, and a lawyer that you can trust. And just make it about the music. Don't be friends. Don't try to party. Don't try to be chummy with people, because you'll get used for like years and dropped off. Get used and dropped off. You gotta be, gotta have, because it's a job.
Right.
People mistake it business for friendship, and they get stuck. They, and you hear those stories about women getting raped and doing this, that sometimes, like, they try, they, a lot of people are in the music industry for the wrong reasons. They in it to get girls, or they in it to look fly or get it, and then they get caught up on competition or who's number one or who's this. Like, it's that, and that's when it all ends. Music is not about none of that. Music is just, it's just supposed to be music and not really feed into none of that. Because the moment you feed into it, moment you're gonna be destroyed in it. There's always gonna be somebody that's good. It's always gonna be somebody that likes somebody better than you. It's always gonna be, it's like, if you take it too serious, and it's gonna be your life. You see a lot of our greats, all they life is about is music. You don't have no family, the kids don't even know their kids, don't have, and it's a sad thing. So if I advise anybody that's new, if you don't have to go through what I went through. You got YouTube, you got Instagram, just do music. Somebody really wants your music, they'll come to you. Then you get your coin. You negotiate your price with your lawyers and stuff.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Will, you had some questions? Oh, was that your last one with me?
No, I got one more.
Okay.
So I know you've got, like, projects and things you've got out now, and you're kind of taking things in a different direction than what you've done in the past. Can you talk a little bit about, like, how you find balance in your life? Because you actually speak about, like, your wife and kids and things like that. So just kind of wondering how you balance the two, having your family, having your career, getting to a point where you want to be in your career and things like that.
I've always been a family man. My dad was a family man. Like, I always had balance. I play basketball. I love basketball. Just doing other things like that. And sobriety. I feel like alcohol steals the moments from you in your life. You won't remember anything. You won't remember what you did yesterday. Then you get up and do it again, and then forget that day, and then forget that day, and then you lose time.
Right.
So, like, the balance is just being sober. Like, not saying, I'm not trying to come off like I'm like perfect, not anti-alcohol thing, but
right.
When you get to the, like, when you're sober, it's like, it just, you could remember and have memories, and it makes me realize that music is not as important as I thought it was, because, like, the music is in me. I don't have to sell or buy. Mm-hmm. I don't have to buy or sell. Like,
right.
I don't have to. Like I always ask myself, was like a big tragedy right now, then, like, there's no more internet, there's no more nothing, like, would I still sing? That's when I get my balance. Like, everything that I am now is inside of me. I don't need things to make me feel good. I don't have to, like, go to the left, go to right, go to this party, go to this, or
right.
Lean on this, lean on that. Like, when I start just accepting my past, start accepting my future, and then where I'm at now, I've just been walking with God, and every day, it's just God is, that's the ultimate balance. And I look at my son, I've been having fun with him. A lot of things I sacrificed now, I used to think it was, like, stupid, but the more and more sacrificing, I realized, like, I have more fun. Like, I was supposed to go on tour with Jay-Z, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy. My son was like, I don't want you to go, Daddy. And now me and my son was able to do so much stuff that summer. I was able to get a studio. I didn't think I was going to get the studio, but balance is sometimes, to me, saying no to money, saying no to, like, more and more I say no to money and just say yes to the right things, or, like, things that just feel good. that's not about me, about somebody else, that's where I've been getting a little bit of cushion.
Nice.
Not money or material things, just wake up in the morning and have, like, peace. Like, I don't got to deal with stuff because I'm not taking on anything. But I found myself, I was drinking and I was taking every time, any type of situation, I just took it on. Like, oh, I'm good. Opportunity. It's taken now. You're in this opportunity. You got this opportunity. It may seem good. You get paid, but it's, sometimes stuff can be overwhelming because you got to deal with so much stuff. But sometimes just no, like I'm saying no, and I'm just going to do regular stuff. Life is much better that way.
I don't blame you.
I'm getting what I want. And I'm in my own environment. Like I like being on tour with Raphael Stig. I don't have to deal with things I don't want to have to deal with, you know. Or I like being at my studio working with a good producer and friend of mine, J-Mo. It's no drama. It's just, we just make music. There's no other things. There's no other extra BS that comes with it.
Well, it's good. I'm glad that you found that, and thank you for sharing that, because I think that's really important to say no, and I think a lot of people have a really hard time saying no because they're afraid they're going to hurt somebody's feelings, but there's nothing wrong with taking care of yourself and taking care of home first. So, again, thank you for sharing that, and I will pass it off to Will. I think he's got some questions.
Yes. Hey, Charlie, thank you so much. Appreciate this. I've been listening to the entire show, and I think a lot of my questions have already been answered. It's an honor. Thank you. And what is really amazing about this, Sunday night, we had a discussion, and it was a question that came up. Should Christians and so-called other religious groups, should they listen to so-called secular music? And the conversation was so intriguing that we had another conversation last night on one of my shows addressing the same things, right? And so let me set it up for you. For instance, if there's a pastor and a pastor is a DJ or he's a musician, you know, should he be allowed also to be able to play his music and be able to enjoy so-called, and I said so-called secular music, right? Because we also talked about what is secular music? Is there such thing, right? I've noticed that your music is more spiritual, and you talk about a place of an inner peace that comes out, and I can hear the hunger and the passion, and you also talk about confidence and things of that nature. So I'm throwing a whole lot out there. And lastly, I was reading an article yesterday, and it was a student from a major music university, and he asked his instructor, you know, I like gospel music, but I also like what they call secular music. I mean, what should I play? You know, and so the instructor said, look, people out in what they call the so-called secular world be more accepting to your gospel music than people within the gospel platform trying to accept your music.
Right.
Okay. Could you kind of address that? I knew I threw a lot at you, but thank you.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Well, I can go from the last thing you said. Like, I would think the reason why people probably in the church wouldn't probably cleave to my music versus to my secular world, because like if you grew up in church all your life and that's what you're doing, you don't, it's not for you. They don't need it. They never, like some people, you know, never been, a lot of people I know haven't even been out of the state. Like they haven't traveled. They, all they know is church, and they're good. That's where they need to be. Like they're good. It's not for them. My dad was a youth gang advisor. I know murderers. I know people that turn their lives, murderers that are preachers and pastors now, and change their lives. And I know, like, people that's been on drugs. And you know, when you're in church, you see that type of stuff, but sometimes we tend to, like, pretend like it's not there, or, like, God is just going to zap them and it never happens. But I know that, like, life-changing things, like, being sober or changing your life, that comes from like hard work and dedication and God. But God is the faith. He's the source of our faith. But he says faith without works are dead. So like I know a lot of Christian people that listen to my album, they get it, but they get it after they finally like pay attention and like, oh, because a lot of people didn't never really experience probably what I experienced, or some people do. Like and it probably doesn't have that, you know, a lot of churches kind of program now, like they have these labels like shout music. Like what shout music? Like, I will say that shout music is supposed to be this way, or like a lot of people like, that don't sound like church. But a lot of things that the church do goes against the Bible, but the Bible says he wants a new song. So if he wants a new song, then why we keep doing the same stuff all the time? I've been in church all my life, so I kind of like went away from it. I have a relationship with God. I love the church, but I love a church just like Jesus coming back for a church without a spot or a wrinkle. And a lot of churches wrinkly and they spot it up. So that's probably why they wouldn't listen to it.
Right. And couldn't your music even be a bridge to bring yourself, someone who's a non-believer, but they're trying to find their way? Couldn't your music even bridge them or be a bridge towards them, even coming to church or maybe being a little more spiritual?
I would hope so. It did it for me. Like, I didn't want to be a hypocrite. Like, when I was doing this music, I don't want to say, like, it's messages. You know how, like, the Bible says, for I love you, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. It's like, Christ loves us. We sing. A lot of church songs I'll be hearing, it's like, I love you, Lord, forever. I'm this and I'm that, and I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And it's like, you can't sing that like that when I know you're not doing that. Like, you're struggling with this. So I, when I come to God, I try not to be, I'm not saying I'm perfect. God, please have mercy on my soul. I just try my best to have reverence and to respect him. I don't want to just do gospel music to sell. I don't want to sell records in church. I don't want to do that. Like, it just doesn't feel right to me. And the Bible says clearly, not supposed to sell the truth. I don't want to sell gospel records. One of my main reasons too. I don't feel right doing that.
All right, Q-Man.
I feel like with that attitude and people that's on the street, like especially somebody that's selling drugs, and when I have a conversation with them, I say those things, they will probably try to be spiritual because they're looking for somebody that's real. Like, at least I can be real. I can meet them where they at, and then when they hear the music, they can understand it. Like, okay, I get it, because a lot of like people that are not spiritual don't understand somebody that's already there. Like, sometimes as church people, we tend to just think that everybody's supposed to think the way we think. But there's certain gospels that can't preach that same way overseas when somebody is going through different things, and or somebody who's in jail who's a game banger is not going to get what you're talking about unless you break it down to them simple.
That's right. That's right. You can't give a baby a steak, can you? No, I said you can't give a baby a steak, can you?
Right, exactly. That's a perfect example of what I try to do. I try to be a beacon of light and try to be give everybody baby food. Like, it's my first album, and I'm hopefully evolve and people can grow with me.
It's such a weird thing too, because it's like gospel music and then before I say that, it's like two words I hate. I hate that I can't stand when people say neo soul and secular music, because it's like one of them is not, neo soul isn't new music. They just, for that time period, it was new for instrumentation to be played, because R&B was like merged with hip hop and all that other stuff. And then secular music, like you could track it all the way back to like the 50s and 60s, like Sam Cooke records, Bobby Womack, like all of them played in church and they took that there. And then also people in church played R&B music that was considered secular or whatever. Like the Clark sister, Twinkie Clark, produced You Brought the Sunshine. Like, she got most of that music she got from a commercial, from a jingle. And then another song she got that jamming, what's it, Stevie Wonder's jamming.
Right.
That, right. Like, so she said that out of her mouth, that she got that from that Stevie Wonder record.
So it's always been interchangeable. Well, what we're going to do right here before we go, before we let you go, we play this game on a show called the What's Wrong With You game. And it's basically an either-or game. He's basically picking between two artists. It's not vocal comparisons. It's just, like, what artist you listen to the most in your in your phone or your whatever you listen to music on, whatever whoever you listen to. But we I'm going to do the list like this. Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass?
Marvin Gaye.
There you go. The OJs or the Whispers?
OJs.
There you go. Prince or Rick James?
Prince.
Prince. There you go. And those are all bonus because I make up the rules as I go. So those, those, you ain't getting no counted against you. Either or, if you would have said which one, it don't matter. Because Prince and Rick James are on the same level. I hate the Prince and Michael Jackson one because that wasn't a fair comparison. Rick James and Prince did the same thing. They were musician-wise on the same level. Okay, this is where it starts changing up here. Okay, this one, you got to get all these right. It's specific with these. Okay, Patti LaBelle or Aretha Franklin?
Aretha Franklin.
I knew you were going to say that. It's all new. I know, you know, they ain't even put, you know, they ain't even had the memorial service yet. So, you know, usually you would get a what's wrong with you on that. But I know EB's going to be happy about that. He's not here. My other co-host, Mary.
Yeah, but I could, I could say this game is rigged. The game is rigged.
Don't listen to our blasphemous producer slash engineer. That's not true at all. But I ain't going to say nothing on that one because it's still new and fresh. But you would have got a what's wrong with you, but that's all right. Okay, the next one, the final one, Brian McKnight or Babyface?
Babyface.
You talking right, okay? Okay, the conclusion of the game is there's nothing wrong with brother Charlie Burrell. Ain't nothing wrong with him. Ain't nothing wrong with him.
Ain't nothing wrong with
him. You won the game.
I know
you walking with the Lord. I was gonna offer you, I was gonna cash up you some change to get a 40 ounce, but I know you said alcohol is the main part of your ministry, so that was gonna be your declaration of winning this was, I was gonna cash up you, some change for a 40 ounce to get convinced of it. Say again about that life. I was gonna make it fancy, but thank you so much for coming in. Hold on, Will. Thank you so much for coming on. When, I know you're working on the tweet project. What other things we should be looking out
for? I'm in the session right now with him. I'm holding up the session. She's here right now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Really? Oh, wow. You right there.
I thought I heard stuff earlier.
Oh, my God. Is this tweet you're on right now?
Nah, no. She's in the back.
She's in the back?
Yeah, she's in the studio.
Man, we holding you up. But thank you so much for coming. But, you working on a tweet project. Is there anything else that we should be looking at? I know you get ready to go on tour. What other projects or anything that you're part of that we should be looking out for?
K-Mo, Sheriff Mosey. He's got an album called Food Stamps. It's about to be amazing. Already amazing. He's being mixed, mastered. He works with Anderson .Paak. He's a great guitar player. He wrote Brand New. He wrote like at least 50% of my new album that came out and the one that's coming out. We share a studio together. And his music.
Wow.
Look out for Jairus Mosey, guitar player, singer.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, he's one of my Mount Rushmore's of guitars. He's legendary. He's been in the industry for so long. Charlie Burrell, people. Listen, he's been on with Jay-Z, the credits are so long. He's been told Jay-Z, like I said before, T.I., Jamie Foxx, Snoop Dogg, Teacher Moses. He's the backing with her. He's the tweet, produced her album, worked with Timbaland, Missy. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for coming on. And, Linda, it's your time. I appreciate it. We had fun. Thank you so much. And y'all can check him out on tour. He'll be on tour with Rafael Sadiq overseas in the fall. And he's also producing Tweet's next album. So y'all give it up again for Charlie Burrell. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Yes, yes, thank you for them claps. We need them claps. But then, man, thank you. I enjoyed this so much, but thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule. I know you're doing a lot all at the same time, but I appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, man.
And we will be back. We're going to go to a quick music break, and we will be back in the next 4 to 5 minutes. And this is a song off of Charlie Brown's album, Testimony. We'll be back.
Charlie Burrell, Warn the People, and welcome back to Soul Savage Show. Q Lynn Green and Whitney. A great interview, ladies.
Oh, man, it was amazing. Man, yeah. I was about to say something. I was like, I had my question. I don't know why you acted brand new. You was acting brand new like Charlie Burrell. We back, y'all. Soul Savage Radio. We just interviewed. Before I get into it, with Will. We had Grammy Award winning, producer, songwriter, extraordinary guitarist, Charlie Burrell on at the top of the hour. It was an amazing interview. Like I said before, I booked the guest on, so I get artists that I like, musicians I like, singers I like, and usually my questions are lengthy because I know his discography. Like, I know the records he's played on, I know the people he's touring with, so of course my list of questions, y'all ain't new to this. Y'all know my questions are going to be long. And so, I only had a few.
50 minutes.
That wasn't a lot. Maybe 45 minutes.
No, I was looking at the clock.
45 minutes.
I'm saying, wait a minute, hold it. Whitney and I only had a couple of questions. Oh, my.
I know Evie wasn't here. Evie wasn't here.
Well, Whitney's here.
That's my question.
Whitney's here.
Whitney, I only got about 3-4 questions.
And Will is here. You know,
and that's how it goes.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, I did have more, but you asked, you covered like 4 of my questions easily.
Right,
so
and I just picked
up off of what he said.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, she went 56 minutes.
No, I did not. I went 45 because I looked at the time.
You weren't looking at the. You went 56 minutes. Matter of fact,
I was looking at the time clock.
Hold on. I'm gonna check this out because I know what time.
Oh my God.
I know what time I inboxed you, and I said, "Does would anybody else?" No, let me tell you verbatim. I said, "Will anyone else get a chance to ask a question?"
Will our producer acts brand new every time? How many interviews we did? We did interviews this whole month, and I did. I actually had more with Chef Crawford than anybody. I had exactly 12 questions I asked him. And I added like 3-4 more. At
So you always.
I only asked him about 7 to 8 questions. Trying to extend the time to an hour so we could end on time and get done. And that was the plan. And then you were like, "Is anybody else? Are you gonna take?" He's like, "Is anybody else gonna ask the question?"
Yeah, I sure did.
The whole interview.
The whole interview, and I did that at 4.
Because it's, I created the show, so I was thinking, I booked the guest on, so I think I would have the most questions.
Whitney. You know,
so why would I let you ask all the questions?
Whitney, you know, that's
you
a backhand.
You know, Charlie Burrell. Confuse him with Tony.
Hey, I don't care what
you'll
say.
Confuse him with Tony, just like you did with,
That was two.
Royale, when I let you on the interview,
that was two years ago.
You thought his wife was on.
That was 2 years ago.
You confused Angel and you confused Whitney.
That was 2 years ago, Whitney.
You can look up. No, it wasn't.
It was 2 years ago.
You go to the Black Music Month show. It was 2 years ago.
It was 2 years ago.
To the Black Music. No, it was last year actually.
No, it was not. Year. It was
it
two.
It, yes, was, it was. Last
it was 2016.
Year. All you gotta do. Whitney, all you gotta do is go to soul7s.com, go to the search bar on my website and type in Black Music Month, hip hop. Mm-hmm. That's all you gotta do.
That was 2016.
I started with Royale Watkins, the veteran comedian that's been on Def Jam, back in the day, the 90s, and you know who he is. Have you watched Deliver Us from Evil? Eva, the hairdresser, he played the hairdresser in the beauty.
Okay, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
We had him on, and his wife, he's been married for over 20 plus years, and his wife unfortunately couldn't come on because she works in the industry as well. She works on set like, what's it called, Dear White People, that was on Netflix. She does, she's a costumer, she does gets them dressed and all that stuff, get the actors and stuff dressed. She does that work. And so she couldn't get on because she was on set, okay? Naturally perfect. Royale said, okay, you know, my wife's not going to be on. I was like, all right, cool. He said, can I still come on? I was like, yeah, cool. Okay, he comes on. And then I immediately called Will and said, hey, I know I promoted that April and Royale was going to be on. It's just going to be Royale because his wife is away at work on set. And so she can't come on. It's just going to be Royale. I specifically said that before we started the show, that it's just going to be Royale.
Okay. All right, okay. And your point is?
No, let me finish. So you can hear exactly, so you can get verbatim of how the interview did. Okay, we 45 minutes into the interview with Royale. Okay, Angel, I planned it, the interview. We had about 27 guests on. And so I had the other 27 guests come to call in an hour after the interview. And so Royale was going to be the first hour of the interview. And then the last hour, we were going to talk about Black Music Month, hip hop. And so after we 45 minutes in, we kind of went a couple minutes over because we were playing the What's Wrong With You game with Royale. We finished the game with him. Okay, Angel and Marcus of Bat Chick Angel TV. She's a working actress. She's been on, Blackish. She played the nanny on Blackish. She's on a whole bunch of other stuff. And her husband, both of them have a podcast. Is This Going to Cause an Argument? It's on YouTube, so that's a plug if anybody wants to listen to Bat Chick Angel TV. That's Angel Lakita Moore and Marcus Tanksley. Okay, we're interviewing them. And so I cue to him and ask Will, do you have any questions for our guest? And he's like, yes, I do. April, is it? No, we talking to Angel. That's who he starts with. April, is it? And she was like, no, my name is Angel. I was like, Will, we just had this conversation. And I told you that April's not going to be on. This is Angel Marcus. And he's like, well, I'm looking at your Facebook now, and I see two. Will, that was April and Royale and Angel and Marcus. We have Angel and Marcus. Listen, you're going to pee on yourself. There's people commented and said they peed on themselves. and that they were spitting out water because me and him was going back and forth because he didn't know who we had on.
That was good.
He had a comedian. He had a professional comedian that gets paid to do this for a living, that books theaters, that's a produced Cedric the Entertainer. He had an actual professional comedian laugh at him because he kept stumbling. And he's like, I heard that you're in the entertainment business as well, the market. He was like, no, he's not in the music industry. He works a regular job. He's the only one in the entertainment business. So this is the person you want me to, Will wants me to leave it to somebody that then fumbled the ball multiple times when we did interviews. And you owe me.
That was one night.
EB spot.
Oh no.
He's trying to get EB spot. That's what he's trying to do.
Oh no. Wouldn't
trying
it?
Trying to take EB spot?
No.
He found the opportunity.
Surely not.
No, I would never take EB. No.
Not Will.
Whitney.
Like Charlie Burrell.
Whitney. Okay, please believe me. Okay. Q Lynn voted for Donald Trump, so you can't believe a word she said. Okay.
That's
fake news. That's fake news. No, Whitney, that's fake news. I would no.
Ain't no fake truth.
That is fake news because see, hey, look, let me tell you about being brand new.
Listen, if you be nice and talk right before we go to break, we go to this next song, I'm going to let you do the 6 minutes of rage because I know we got a whole bunch of information that came out this week, and I would love to hear your 6 minutes of rage. So we can do that after the break.
But
so
okay, well, I'll pull up the song while I explain myself because you are, fake news, Q-Land. Whitney, it's fake news. Number one, I would never, ever, ever try to replace EB because I think that he is a valuable asset on this show. I mean, the more the merrier, especially when you have good people. Whitney, I think you're fantastic. You know, Q Lynn is just a hawk. She just take up so much time, right? She just think because it's her show, she can dominate all of the time.
Whitney.
Okay, now, when I made that mistake.
If these are my favorites, if I said Chip Crawford is my Mount Rushmore producers, and if I say Charlie Burrell is my Mount Rushmore of guitars, wouldn't I know more information than y'all and wouldn't I have more questions?
Not necessarily. You excluded that.
Why wouldn't I have more questions?
Hey, because some of us others have studied music as well, and we may have questions differently from yours.
We ain't talk about music. I talk about the actual person we interviewed. Well, I didn't have to look none of this up.
Are you saying because I don't know that person because I can't talk about what inspired him?
I don't know why you deflected from the fact that I have so many questions because I would know.
No, that's
you try to defer from the logical point that I just made.
I
know this information.
See what I'm talking about?
I'm a fan of these artists.
Always got to be the center of attention. Always have, you have Donald Trump personalities. I'm telling you,
if
you need to get a check.
I wouldn't ask as much questions as Charlie Burrell. You would ask him, did he sing with the Caravans or something?
Don't do it.
And then he played with the Isley Brothers or something. That's what you would ask.
You don't, look.
No, what is it? What's that group called? Confunction. You asked him, did he play on Caravan of Love or something? Did he play on that record? Because that's one of my favorites. Play on the OJ's sailboat? Because that's one of my favorite songs. Did you play on that?
It was a sailboat. It was Ship Ahoy.
Ship Ahoy, whatever. Same thing. They both got boats in it. Okay. You know, let's have the updates, but we too busy arguing. I have a lot of updates, but we run out of time. So what we're going to do real quick, if Will's ready, we go to a break, and we'll be back with the 6 minutes of rage.
Well, let's hold on 1 second. Let's see this for 1 second here. I've got
you too busy going back and forth. See what I'm saying?
No.
Going back and forth with me. You're going to be
That's exactly what happened that night. That's what happened that particular night because I was going back and forth doing things. And then I did have to grab a glass of Pinot, so I missed something
that's
in the meantime.
Yeah. Lord,
I'm glad you didn't start drinking there, because I ain't no telling what you would ask him if you was drinking.
Oh,
like,
man,
probably playing Bobby Womack while he's singing.
There we go.
We'll be back,
yo. Uh-huh. You know, I'm about to drown you out.
We'll be back, yo.
Hey, welcome back. This is the Soul Savages Show. Q-Land Green and Whitney. All right. All right, ladies. All right. See, Whitney, you see what happens, Whitney?
You know, I don't have much to say. You just got to let her get it out sometimes.
Yeah, I understand. And see, I'm the one that needs help. I can't believe. And see, Whitney, while she's doing her thing, that was one time, okay? And I was trying to juggle a lot of different things, you understand?
Yeah, right.
That was just one time, you know? And because if Q-Lynn is honest, she'll tell you that when the Soul Savage Show was just her and I. So then she fell in love with EB and just dumped me. That's what the whole deal is all about. It.
That's what happened. When somebody wants order going around on the radio show that just wants to, you know, do things the right way.
And
get penalized for it and then try to turn the truth around on somebody.
Yeah.
Then when you allow them to come on the show and have a whole segment, I don't know any other producer that gets their own segment on the show. But you get your own segment and that still ain't good enough. I don't know what else I gotta do. I feel like this is a loveless radio relationship because I feel like I'm giving everything. This feels like a love hip hop relationship. I feel like I'm
It is like that.
I feel like I'm one of those paid actors on that show.
That's right.
I'm not feeling
the love. Hey, Q-Lynn, remember that show we did that we were talking about cheating and you let everybody know that you were single but you would cheat? That was the funniest thing.
Listen, what is wrong? Listen, go over here. Put my business out here.
You put it out there on air. You told every eligible bachelor out there that's a that's within the sound of your voice around the world, by the way, that you would cheat.
I said I was taking and still look. I said I had a job and I still take applications. That's all I said. And then you turn to this, telling my business out here. I said I'm single sometimes when I feel like
you're single sometimes. Whitney, what does that mean? Come on, let's translate. All right, look here. Look here, I know.
You look here, I know. Be eligible and taken, and I said those two things exist.
Right, I know that you. I know that you're Republican.
That's how that works.
I know that you're Republican, and you believe in alternative facts. But come on now, don't be acting like a Kellyanne Conway.
Don't you sit here? Listen, we might skip 6 minutes of race.
I'm asking the question, Whitney. What does it mean? What does it mean? Look at Whitney. What does it mean when a lady says, "Look, I am taken, but I'm also open"? I mean, you know. And look here, you know.
Because both of those things exist at the same time. I just said
no. They cannot coexist at the same time. Either you're taken or not.
I mean, it sounds like they can exist for Q Lynn. But in general, no.
No,
No. But there's an exception with Q Lynn. Cause she, I mean, at least she's being honest. She put it out there.
No. Whitney, don't softball.
You know, I gotta try to find the positive.
I know that's your girl. I understand. I understand.
I don't need to find a positive, okay?
No. I just want to warn.
People, no, just the listening audience. Listen, you can be taken and single at the same time.
How in the world? Oh, okay.
Like I said before, if y'all would give funds.
No, it's a different thing.
I could, side piece and a biscuit. app
that
I'm trying to create.
Oh, that's what it was.
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, that was so funny.
When people live like this, because people that's dying for these kind of relationships and don't have a platform for it.
Okay.
And I say when I rake in on the billions, because I could take this so many different ways. We can monetize this and we can market it, and I just need somebody that knows how to do apps to get with it. And we got $1 billion business going on. This is gonna be bigger than the Ashley Madison.
Okay, Aculin, we might have to, you know, Aculin, we might have to talk to David. Aculin, you got an idea. I think we need to talk to David.
Yeah, okay. We need to get David on.
Yeah, we get David on that situation there. Right.
Five Piece and a Biscuit app. Don't worry about the name for
now. Okay. And folks, I want the audience to know that's not the same David, that has flipped on Trump there out of the Inquirer magazine. We're talking about David, somebody else.
Man, you segue into that perfectly. But yeah, like I said, I'm a principal girlfriend out here in the street, so
yeah.
We're gonna move on. If Will's ready, he's waiting on his music.
Oh no, I'm not waiting on anything. I'm ready. 6 minutes of rage. I've been waiting for this. Soul Savage show. 6 minutes of rage. Let's get it. Oh boy, hey, welcome to the 6 minutes of rage here on the Soul Savage Show. I hope you've been paying attention. We've got scandals, insider trading, money laundering, tax fraud, bank fraud, oh my goodness, videotapes, Amarosa, and a whole lot more. Hey, where do we start right here? As a matter of fact, if you don't know, something happened recently. Oh, the president's lawyer who's 12 years, with Trump. Hey, he doesn't know them, but he did know them. He did a whole lot, but he didn't do anything. He was an honorable man a month ago, and now he is a slum bad rat. Oh, wow. What is happening here? Now, in case you didn't know, also Paul Manafort. Do you know Paul Manafort? The guy who was the head guy as far as the campaign was concerned, with the 2016 election, Paul Manafort. Oh boy. Deep in the White House, but guess what? He quit mysteriously about a month after Trump was elected. You want to know why? Well, guess what? This week he was found, charged and guilty of 8 felonies this year. Well, he was charged with 18, but the jury only found him guilty of 8, which was still put him behind the bars for the rest of his life, but don't get excited. Normally these things, it says that he can get up to 80 years. Hey, the sentence will be reduced a lot more. It may be up to 10 to 12, but guess what? In a federal prison, you serve all of them. Now, he hasn't flipped yet. You want to know why? Well, nobody knows why, but it's mysterious because he has another court case in Virginia, and that is the state case and some of the similar charges. But let's get back to the original one. Now, why was he only convicted 8 out of 18 when the documentation was there? It was right there. Guess what? It was a hung jury on one. Of one, rather. One juror held doubt. She couldn't find reasonable doubt. Are you kidding me? Reasonable. It's right there in black and white. But you know what? There's a reason behind that. But at least he got convicted. Now, also, oh, his lawyer, Michael Cohen, you know the one that played off the porn star? Oh, my goodness. He just pleaded guilty to 8 felonies. Now, he's also cooperating with the special investigator, the prosecutors. He says he's going to tell everything. You know, I have a love for my country. I have a love for my wife. Oh, my God. I want to tell the truth. I want to be a good guy. I'm going to go to church. I want to do everything. I'm going to kiss the Pope's ring. I'm going to do it all just so I can get back into the good graces of America because I want to do this for my country. No, buddy. You just don't want to spend the rest of your life in prison. So you're going to squeal like a rat. You the same guy that said you're going to take a bullet for this man. Oh, you said, oh no, that's not going to happen. But anyway, also, and now there's been some doubt because they say he has no credibility. Well, what about the guy he worked for? Well, guess what? Cohen's, his lawyer's, story has been backed up because, this David, Pecker, who was also, involved with the Inquirer magazine. I think he was the president and CEO of the Inquirer magazine. He just corroborated Michael Cohen's story. He said, yep, we did pay hush money. We did pay hush money, to his girlfriend, playmate, Karen McDougal, what he says he did not have an affair. Now, I also understand that it might be some campaign contribution violations that's going on. And guess what this brilliant guy did yesterday? He got on TV. He said, no, it didn't come out of the campaign. I paid it. And guess what? That's a crime. That's even better because you did not report it. There is so much going on. Like I said, it sucks drugs and rock and roll. I don't know whether there's drugs or not, but there's a whole lot of rocking and rolling. And we talk about money laundering. Hey, two governors. Well, as a matter of fact, two of the people who endorsed this man in the first place. Guess what? One has been busted for insider trading. Folks, you can go to prison for that. Martha Stewart, remember her? She went to prison for that. And now there's also a Republican senator or congressman out of California. He and his wife was charged with, oh my goodness, stealing campaign funds. He was in court today, he and his wife. And they had trips. They had, oh, guess what? They spent money. They spent about $14,000 at Costco. Good Lord. Did they buy the store? $14,000 at Costco. They even had bought a plane ticket for their pet rabbit. Folks, you cannot make this garbage up. You talking about cleaning up the swamp? Hey, the swamp just came to Washington, D.C. And don't forget about Betsy DeVos. Matter of fact, you know what she's trying to do right now? She is trying to make sure that the states can use federal money so you can arm the teachers with guns. Oh, my God. And let's talk about Uncle Ben Rice Carson. Okay, you know who he is in HUD. He has tripled the income or trying to triple the income of the people who need it the most, And guess who is benefiting from that monetarily? Guess what? And you guess too. Donald Trump and Jared Kushner, because guess what? Those houses that a lot of these low income people are living in right now, Trump owns a lot of those properties and so does Jared Kushner. Wow, this has been 6 minutes of rage. I hope I gave you a little bit of information. There's a whole lot more, but in 6 months, I did the best that I can, Q-Lan.
Oh, man, I wish, do you watch Real Time with Bill Maher?
Oh, yes. Oh, man. I sure do.
He's been on it. I can't wait till tomorrow till he talks about it, but yeah. He's been spot on. The guests he's had on has been like spot on with what he's saying they like they slowly Mueller is like slowly getting out there. Like he's not going to automatically, you know, get Trump because he know he got him. He ain't gonna put it on yet. I already know what he's doing. He's like slowly baiting all of them out there, and he's getting all the information out mm-hmm. there. They about to get him now. His old funky ass lawyer Rudy Giuliani, his old fake wooden chip Benjamin Franklin teeth. He over there talking about, oh, he not
wow.
excited. But I throw shots all day at all them old ugly saltine devils. Okay, that's what I call them. They saltine devils. Devils. That's what they are. Saltine Satanists. All of the above. That's what Rudy Giuliani is. He is Satan's nephew in the flesh.
What is his strategy, Q-Lin? What is his strategy, Rudy's? What is his strategy?
He ain't got no strategy. He don't say, God be the dumbest lawyer. Not with just Michael Cohen. He had Michael Cohen, but Giuliani proven that he got the second dumbest lawyer. Because this fool gonna say on national TV, he said, well, a president can't be indicted. It can't be indicted. But guess what? He got, whether or not, he gets indicted is irrelevant. When it comes to these midterm elections, like I keep saying every show, y'all bet November the 6th, to be specific, everybody need to go out and vote and get these Republicans up out of here, take back the House and the seat. We need all them to change up. Might not be the Senate, but I ain't worried about that. I'll talk about the House. If we overturn that House, definitely impeachment process is about to start. Because he gonna get up out of there. And that's what the Republicans, and that's why them cowards up there ain't changing. Because I'm telling y'all right now, they thinking that they could still win in November. And that's why they ain't started this yet, because they trying to get their base. But once that base be gone, oh, he up out of there. And I forgot how many seats they said that, I think it's 23 seats they need for Democrats.
To overturn. Yep, that's all. They need about 23. And
Rudy Giuliani, all that stuff ain't gonna work. He ignorant. They stupid. Then he sit here. This is the dumbest. Trump was on TV, tweeting, because that's all he do is tweet. Was sitting there tweeting that, calling people dumb, calling LeBron James, dumb, calling, Don Lemon dumb. Clearly not true. Clearly racist, clearly all of the above. But he got the nerve to call them dumb, and this fool sitting here committing treason with every tweet. Like, he do know, and then the thing is, he knows what he doing, because he thinks he trying to operate this country like an authoritarian. That's what he doing. Because
mm-hmm.
you saw what Jeff Sessions did the other week whenever he was trying to send that whole thing with that woman. That was here, illegally she was supposed to go to trial, and that congressman, he said, you better turn that plane back, or we're gonna hold you in contempt. And guess what his ass did? Turn that plane back, cause you ain't got the right to do that, and they keep playing his game, and trying to do some law and order stuff. I'm tired of that little, saltine, deviled, what's it called? The little Keebler elf? That's what he looks like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Jeff Sessions.
I just want somebody to jump him. Like, why? Like, my thing is this. Like, I ain't trying to, incite violence, because that's what they say liberals and stuff do, and I don't identify with liberalism and Democrats and stuff like that. But the ones, whoever was popping caps in Republicans that one day at the baseball game, why can't y'all pick them out? Like Jeff Sessions or somebody like that deserve to get popped. I'm just saying, I'm not saying I need it to happen. It's just a hypothetical. Like, why can't that stuff happen? Like, we lost a legend last week. Why can't they take them? Like something to where they not here on earth. Why does evil live forever? That's the only question I have with this whole scenario.
Man.
Why does evil last a lifetime? I feel like evil people are, it might be some science to, spiritual, because we talked about a drummer that passed away, good-hearted people like that passed away. Why we gotta be stuck here on evil? It must be something to that. But I'll let you go ahead. We'll finish your thought. I'm just sitting here.
I would like to have witness input on this also, because, this is getting, it is so ridiculous right now. You can't make this stuff up. And a lot of people say, are you surprised? Hell yeah, I'm surprised, because I didn't think that we would go down in the toilet this fast. You know, I told someone else on another show, I was depressed right after the election, you know, 2 years ago. And I said, you know, you better get your butt out of the bed because guess what? Things are getting ready to heat up around here. And so, but it was sort of like a motivating force for me. It says, you know what? I got to do better. I've got to encourage more people. But you know, it is crazy. If you look at what's going on, his lawyer, Michael Cohen, and so right now he's trying to distance himself from Michael Cohen, but this guy knows a whole lot. Folks, I'm telling you right now that, when I said, this guy from the Inquirer magazine, and it's also reported that there are more women that he paid money to other than those two. Now keep in mind, one was done out of a fund and his lawyer paid this woman directly, right? That's the Stormy Daniels. This is the madam. Okay. Well, for the she's the prostitute rather. But anyway, and this also, there was Karen McDougal, two different ladies, right? And he used to take her in the back way up into the Ritz-Carlton, and he had some bungalow or something like that out there, right? But the point that I'm getting is there's more. And there was reportedly or alleged right now that there's more hush money. But the thing that is all about a lot of different things happening that we don't even know about and people don't pay attention to, that's why we need to get out and vote. There's that connection with Russia. Remember that? The NRA. And I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that remember the Russia gave the NRA $30 million. And then the NRA gave the Trump campaign $30 million. Don't you think that was the same $13 million? I mean, you have to make the connections there. And also look at all of the cyber stuff that's going on. And he is the master of tweeting. Okay. And his wife had the nerve to be on TV the other day talking about we've got to have anti-bullying, you know, with her Be Best campaign. I don't understand how you're going to have two different messages out of the same bedroom. I don't understand that.
Yeah. That didn't make sense to me either, because I was like, I didn't know if she was being serious. And, you know, normally you wouldn't question stuff like that. Like if somebody is trying to promote good behavior and to reduce poor behavior, to put it simply. But I really was not sure. And it all stemmed from her wearing that jacket when she went to go visit those kids.
That's right.
That, whatever it said, I don't care to you, something like that.
Yep.
So it was just like, I don't understand this. Like, that was a form of bullying to me, or teasing, antagonizing, all of that. Like, getting people riled up about something you shouldn't get them riled up, and now you're talking about bullying? Like, you can have a seat. Because I don't want to hear that from you.
Right.
It's not genuine to me.
To me either. Q-Land, it's really amazing. You know, and I heard last night somebody was saying, you know, as soon as whenever he gets out the White House, they believe that she's going to divorce him, right? Because she's already, her parents, she's got her parents over here. They're living large and, they're already citizens too, right? I mean, what do you think about, you know, we were joking around earlier about cheating and all this kind of stuff, but can you imagine having somebody or being married to somebody and then there's a scandal every day? You know, and the thing that really bothers me, if you are a bully, be a real bully, because then he comes back. Oh, they're attacking me. But yet he does this 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. He starts the news cycle. And when people report it, he said, oh, it's a fake news, the fake press. And I tell you the danger of it really is what happens if he's able to shut down the press. He already keeps them out of a lot of things. All right. When they've had several meetings like with Russia and everybody else, the public couldn't be there. The reporters couldn't be there. They don't answer their questions. It's Q-Land, I know you watch CNN. And what do you think about Sarah Huckabee? You know she knows that she's lying. She knows that she knows that her boss is lying. What do you think?
Sarah Huckabee. I think she's just doing her job. But the one before couldn't do it because he's tired of lying, Sean Spicer. He turned red every time. They asked him a question. He's like, why are you asking me questions? I'm like, dude, that's your job. Like, why are you getting mad at me? Like, this is what you do for a living.
You really?
So it probably does take a toll on her that she got to come up with new ways to say some stuff to try to distract from what he's actually doing. And maybe in her head, it may be factual. She probably can take it in better than Sean Spicer because he couldn't handle like lying every
every time or whatever. But with her, I think she tries to twist it. She's just like them entitled Caucasian people that always trying to flip stuff around when you say something. Like, you say something and they'll take it a whole different way. And that's what she does. And so I don't think she's affected by it. Well, I think that's just how I feel. I feel like she's not affected by it. I think in some way she knows it's wrong, but she's still that kind of person that'll flip it. She'll still flip it into something else because she keeps doing it or whatever. But my thing is, with every other scandal that comes on about this White House, he's going to say something else because the NFL's getting a start, and you know they're going to start kneeling and all that stuff. Some players are, some aren't, and they try to put policy in there to try to change it. But I think he's gonna keep, like, all that was distraction. LeBron James, that whole Don Lemon tweet, he does that to try to distract from all these different people getting indicted. You know what I mean? And so he keeps doing it to try to distract from what's actually happening because he wants people to focus on that stupid stuff he's saying besides what he's actually doing. And that's why I said, like, the only thing that's going to change, like they said, you can't indict a sitting president, but it's going to take an impeachment. And like I said, this is probably, I think Bill Maher said on the show, this is, and then other guests that were on, they said this is the most important election. This is like the most, like any critical one, this is the most critical one come November.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more.
It's the most critical. But the positive thing that I see in it is because of that, the lack of diversity that they had has actually been more diverse, like with congresswomen and different people that's holding, want certain position in political field. They have way more black women being on the ballot as congresswomen. You just had, what is one, the Georgia, the one that's running for governor.
Down in Texas?
Georgia, I forgot it. No,
in Georgia, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in Georgia.
That, and he's already getting a lot of support. And then,
right.
In the New York primary, they had, I don't know her ethnicity, but she's fantastic.
Right.
Elizabeth Warren. Like my thing is, I feel all positives happening. I feel like there's actually people that's running in the mid elections that's coming up in these spots that can actually do their job and that people are going behind because they fit every criteria what they're trying to push or whatever. So I see more positive than negative this come November. I know it's definitely going to be higher than 2012 mid election because that was like ridiculous. That's why we in the place we are now, because of that 2012 mid election, because nobody voted Democratic wise. Black 4% of black people voted. This is an actual fact.
That's 4%
of black people voted in the 2012 mid election. So 94%. Could you imagine if that 90% existed in its entirety, like what that would look like, the numbers and all that. So I think it's already changing. They already got numbers and polls showing in different states in America that's already turning blue. And also, I just read an article yesterday of it's in San Diego. I had it pulled up, but I forgot his name. But it was a guy. He just
Kulan.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, now.
And now.
Oh, okay. My bad. I'm trying to juggle two things at one time. I'm trying. I have a drink in my hand and another. It's sparkling apple juice before y'all start.
We didn't say a word.
I was going to.
Yeah, we didn't say a word.
That's
but we
what
only,
he's talking about. Yeah, not that drink. It was
we've got one
apple juice. I was trying to take the lid off and move the mic at the same time.
I understand. And we've got 1 minute left.
I'm gonna finish my, oh, yeah. And just to add on to that, he just, that seat thingy, it's in San Diego, is a congressman. He was a Republican congressman. The seat that's up for grabs, that one's going to be up for grabs. But this fool, you know what this fool going to do? He's going to actually stay in his campaign race while these charges are against him, of him embezzling $250,000 in San Diego.
That's what, yep, that's what I was talking about earlier. Yep, absolutely.
He embezzled $250,000. Like, the article is so long, of, like, they have actual things of the transaction he made to personal accounts that him and his wife, and not just him, it's his wife too, that they made. Like, they have a laundry list of all the things that they've spent on, trips and, like, random ass, like, camping shit, you know, that they get. Like, how do you put that all, steal all that campaign money and then just use it like that?
Yep.
And like, nobody's ever gonna catch up with you.
I told you.
All this is false. And then guess what his lawyer is gonna say? Guess what the lawyer said in the article? He said, my client, if he did any of this, he said, if he did it, it was all unintentional. That's what his defense was. So this is your lawyer.
Right.
So apparently, you fall in line with Trump of having the worst lawyers in America. Cause what lawyer says that? That's the worst defense in the world. It was all unintentional.
All in, yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I didn't intend to take $250,000. Nope.
Right, exactly.
Oh my god.
All trash.
Oh, this is too funny.
Oh my god, y'all. We're at the end. Throw the whole Republican Congress. Throw them all in the trash.
Alright, that's exactly right.
Happy heathen talk for the night. But we're at the end of the Soul Sappers radio show. Like I said before, we had a great guest on at the top of the hour. We had Grammy Award winning musician, producer, Charlie Burrell. Listen, I ain't gotta sit here and run all these credits now. This dude played at stadiums, theaters, little pop-up spots, hole-in-the-wall clubs. He played everywhere. Anywhere imaginable you can think of as a musician, he's played at. We had him on Grammy Award winning. Play with Jay-Z. Play with Jamie Foxx. Produced for Tweet. I can keep going, y'all. I can keep doing it. His credits is long as hell. We had people that are established in the music industry, people that are behind the scenes. I love interviewing those people. So they can give us the real, give us the gems. And they give it to us effortlessly. It's nothing. You know, it's a camaraderie between musicians. We just have a thing where we can just talk. I could go 2 hours talking about music.
Yeah, we already know that.
But I don't want to bore y'all with that because Will apparently was bored. But I would say my savvy heathen talk is, Will, you ask some good questions. That's the two questions you asked. Those are great questions.
Thank you. Thank you.
You asked.
No, I wasn't bored. Yeah, get out there. You knuckleheads, that says, well, my vote is not going to make a difference. Get out there. Get your lazy butt off that couch and vote. That's my Saturday evening talk.
I'm going to call you Will Whitney. Got me mixed up. Whitney, you got a Saturday evening talk before we go.
I just want to encourage y'all to be out there and be single. But not single like Q Lynn, and just get it in. Enjoy your life. It's your life. Enjoy it.
That's right.
You have a multiple girlfriend out here. You're kind of faithful out here.
Oh my goodness. You're kind of faithful.
Kind of faithful.
Okay. All right. This has been the Soul Savvy Show.
Every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, we be back.
All right, folks. Soul Savvy, yeah. Studio W, The Buzz.